Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon. This is J.R. Moore coming to you live from deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks. On Sunday, the 26th day of September, year of our Lord, 2010. Welcome to the John Moore Show. Well, today we're supposed to have a very special guest, Lucas. And I hope Lucas remembers to call in. We just talked yesterday about him being a guest today, so I hope he remembers. And as soon as he calls in, my engineer will be notifying me here on the board. So it's going to be a fun program, and we have a lot of ground to cover. Lucas and I were talking about just how much ground there is to cover, and it's substantial. It really is substantial. I'm still working on my article. The title of it is "The Gulf Stream Has Stopped." Having it edited and reviewed and edited and reviewed and doing rewrites, it's just about ready to publish. We got one technical thing I need to get straightened out to before we publish it, and it will be ready to go. It's about 3 pages. It's a real brief summary of how, what, why, where the Gulf Stream has stopped. Not so much what caused it, but what the significance of this is, what it means for all of us. When I say all of us, all 6.5 billion people on the planet will be impacted by this event. One of my research associates is going to be in Germany in the next month or two, and he'll be giving me some firsthand reports about weather-related events in Germany. So these events, these matters, all continue to move forward, move ahead as we monitor them, try to understand them, comprehend them, and report on these events to all of you out there. Another one of my research associates, Sheldon, gave me a call. I was up on a roof and missed it, but it wasn't a good call, and it's good information. Break coming up. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. We're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It says Sunday, the 26th day of September, year of our Lord, 2010. Lucas, welcome aboard, my friend.
Hey, how you doing, John?
Real good. You got good audio. In fact, you might want to back off from your mic just a tiny little bit there.
All right.
That's good. Well, I refer to Talk Radio, Lucas, as a classroom with a revolving door at the back. We have quite a few listeners who know exactly who you are and what we'll talk about. And we have a number of others who don't have a clue who you are or what you're going to be talking about. So we need to accommodate both audiences. Now, this matter that we're going to talk about, the destroyer, Nibiru, Wormwood, Planet X, when did it first come to your attention?
I would say, I've heard stories about it for a long time, but I first really started researching it maybe about a year and a half ago.
Well, and, then you're very new kid on the block, so to speak. If you've only been at 18 months, so you got involved in studying this, and you started making some connections to different things. Tell us how that progressed.
Well, basically, it started. I've studied 9/11 since the day it happened, and it started with that. And then once I realized that, the plot had all these holes in it that were so obvious that I figured they must have been done on purpose like that, in order to divide and conquer the public. So I started looking into it further, and then I started seeing all these people making preparations, the elites moving to the hills and sort of thing. And that's kind of what sparked me into it. I mean, I've kind of known about the Planet X theory for a long time, but I never really put any hard, investigation into it until maybe, going on 2 years ago. I've researched the petroglyphs and the ancients for a number of years, but it was only until recently that I put it all together that they were talking about some sort of cyclical cosmic event.
Right. Right. So you came across the fact, and it is a fact, that the federal government, various other governments, people with deep pockets have been making some very serious preparations for about 30 years, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you really dig deep into this, you can pretty much show that they've been doing it for 100 years. But, you know, there's definitely in the last, since the 80s, they've been making hardcore preparations.
Yes. Are you familiar with the shelter the Russians built in the Ural Mountains, basically an underground city?
No, I've heard about it, but I haven't done any research into it.
Yeah, I found out about it before I learned about any of this Planet X stuff back in the mid-80s, around 84, 85, along in there. And of course, the Cold War was allegedly over 5 or 6 years by then. And it didn't make any sense why they would be spending those kind of resources after the Cold War was supposed to be over. Of course, once I found out about the 10th planet and their concerns, it made perfect sense that they would spend vast amounts of money and time and resources building what amounts to an underground city in the Ural Mountains. Well, all this moved forward, and at some point you decided to give a little presentation for a few close friends. Tell us what happened there.
Well, basically, I was putting down all the information, and you know, I put it in a format that was pretty easy to understand, and I wanted to show all my friends that, so I ended up showing them, and then Harlan, the owner of Brave New Books, he asked me if I would show it to some of his friends, and you know, I expected about 10, maybe 15 people to show up, and I wasn't expecting the room to be packed, but yeah, it turned out pretty good, and people were real interested in the information, that's for sure.
Well, they were, and it was so ironic that here you are making this presentation now. What was the proximity of the Norway Spiral, as it's come to be known, to the presentation at Brave New Books?
I was about halfway done with the presentation then. So I was already in the midst of making this thing when that Norway Spiral happened. And, you know, I had shown my friends about the spirals and stuff. And then that Norway Spiral happened. That was really a kicker.
Oh, yes.
And we've had one in China and one in Australia. So there's been three spirals now, and they've
really?
Never really been
what,
documented.
What was the timing on those other two?
The one in China happened before the Norway Spiral. I can't get an exact date on that because there's so many different, you know, they put out all this disinformation. You never know what's
right.
True. But that one did happen before the Norway Spiral. The one in Australia happened back in June. I believe it was June 5th.
Of this year.
Mm-hmm. And it was June 5th, about 5:30 in the morning, and that one was almost as impressive. The people on the ground said the video doesn't do it justice at all.
Really? Well, it's an interesting phenomenon. Has there been any consensus among people who study such matters as to what this phenomenon is?
Not really. There's been a lot of talk about this and that and the other, from all the way from HARP to time warps and aliens and this and that. And the other. So nobody really knows what it is, other than the fact that the ancients went out of their way to put those spirals in their cave drawings and petroglyphs all around the mountainous regions of North America, South America, and over in Asia.
Well, we talked about this before, but it's worth mentioning again. If you're in a Stone Age survival mode, where you're gathering food and hunting food and preparing food and trying to stay out of the elements, and leisure time is really not something you're going to have very much of. And taking a rock, taking two rocks and beating on one with the other to make markings on a stone wall, on a rock wall, is time consuming, it's tough, it's hard work, and why would you do such a thing unless it was really, really important?
Exactly. Unless it made an impression on their lives, and so many of them. That's the thing, is that there's not just, you know, 5 or 10. There's hundreds and hundreds of these things, probably even thousands when you dig into it deeper. But, and I noticed that most of them are in the mountainous regions, you know, the Utah, New Mexico, Colorado, Arizona, throughout that area. So, you know, and also in the Andes Mountains, you see all these spiral petroglyphs. So,
well, there's there's lots of evidence, and I know you and I understand this, that much of the United States was underwater not all that long ago, wasn't it?
Well, there's shells that lay on top of the ground here in Texas, so that tells you that those aren't fossils. So, you know, they're just regular shells like you'd see down at the seashore. So, you know, Texas was underneath the water. They say that Texas was underneath the water millions of years ago, but that would make the fossils underneath the ground. And, you know, there's a lot of evidence to show, you know, the rivers, both the Nile and the Mississippi, used to flow east to west. So there's a lot of evidence to show at one point in time something with a heavy gravitational pull grabbed a hold of the planet and tilted it, screwed with our axis, messed it up a little bit.
Right, right. Well, there is lots of evidence, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. What new things have you got to talk about that we didn't talk about last time, Lucas?
Well, if anybody that wants to look at the fact that they can cover up an asteroid hitting down in Colombia that leaves a, you know, a crater as big as a football field, and it doesn't even make mainstream media here in the United States, that should tell you how controlled the populace is. And you ask anybody if they know about that asteroid hit in Colombia 2 weeks ago, and you barely find anybody that heard about that.
I was talking to an astronomer last 2 or 3 weeks, and I was trying to find out if there's any real consensus on what the difference is between a meteor, an asteroid, and a comet. And he said, well, John, there's really not. So, so it's they're all basically rocks. A comet is a rock, an asteroid is a rock, a meteor is a rock. To make a hole the size of a football field, which is 100 yards by, 40 or so?
It was 100 yards in diameter, so I don't know. Okay. I never saw it. No pictures ever came out of that. It's like once the stories in the news ran down in Columbia, they made a big hush-up on it after that.
I wouldn't think it would take a terribly large rock, you know, considering the speed these things are moving at. To make a hole that size, maybe, I don't know, is this 20 feet across, 50 feet across?
The size of a refrigerator would do that.
A refrigerator?
Yeah.
Yeah, going that speed? Okay. Yeah, well, it's, what is it, how many feet per second is one of these things moving?
Well, it depends. Some of them are moving, you know, quite fast. Others are moving a little slower. For the most part, I think they probably move like 20 feet per second or... no, it's more like 200. I'm not exactly sure on.
No, it wouldn't be 20 feet per second. It would be more like 2,000 feet per second.
Well, yeah. I was thinking miles per second, but they're whizzing along fast enough that when they impact the atmosphere, you know, some of them are moving. I was looking at the different speeds of them, and some of them are moving twice as fast as others. I'd actually have to go on a NASA website and look at the statistics on...
Well, regardless, when you get a heavy object moving that kind of speed, it's going to make a big hole in the ground. Well, where's your research going these days, Lucas?
Well, basically, looking at dragons and the meaning of dragons and where all that mythology comes from. I believe that the dragons are age-old term for cosmic event, whether it be a shooting star or an asteroid hitting the planet. That's why they were called fire-breathing dragons. And throughout the years, I wouldn't say covered up, but the meanings have been twisted around to mean these, you know, puffed and magical dragon things. And, there's no skeletal evidence of those creatures. So obviously that tells you that the basis of the myth comes in something else. And, it makes common sense, like the Bible says, you know, the great dragon appeared in the sky. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a references to it all across the ancient world.
All right. Now, hold on, Lucas. Bryce, stay tuned. We'll be back after the break.
It's time for us to face the truth with John Moore. Now, if you want to talk to John live on the air, call 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 26th day of September. Lucas, are you still there, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let me give your website out, and that website is World Wide Web, Rabbit Hole, the numeral 2.com. That's Rabbit Hole, one word, numeral 2.com. What's the title of your presentation?
The Destroyer Starring the Future of Mankind.
All right, and that's available at your website, of course. Now, you've got a presentation coming up 2 weeks from today. Tell us the title of it, where it's going to be, what time.
That's going to be at Brave New Books here in Austin, and it's titled The Return of the Great Dragon, and that'll be starting about 7 o'clock on 10-10-10, Sunday the 10th of October.
All right. Well, is there some significance to that particular date?
No, it just seemed like a cool date for one, and two, it was an open spot, and Harlan's been asking me for a couple of months now to do a presentation there, and that just seemed like the ample opportunity was a good date to remember it by.
Outstanding. Well, if I was closer than 800 or 900 miles, I'd probably be there, but it's a bit of a trip for a couple of hour presentation. We got a couple of callers on hold. Are you ready for a caller here, Lucas?
Sure.
Okay. Mike from Illinois. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, hey, guys.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Hey, pretty good. John Lehrer was saying something about... I mean, you know, I listen to a lot of people. I love you guys, both you guys. You do the research. I was listening to John Lehrer. He was talking about 9/11, how he was doing some research on the black boxes, I think it was namely probably United Flight 93, possibly, descending through 18,000 feet. Anything above 18,000 feet is totally controlled, 29.92 standard atmospheric pressure, so that's what it's set to above 18. So once you descend through 18, you call center, and then you put the pressure that everyone else is going to be flying at, because, you know, below that altitude, you want to be watching out for everybody else. Now, how is a student pilot, you know, from wherever those Arabs were from, going to know to do that? Well, you know, and then that was like a discrepancy, Mr. Lear was saying. But my dad's a retired captain for Eastern, and he says black boxes don't have that information, you know. So it's like, now I got to go back and find out exactly what John Lear said and question that, you know. But the fact of the matter is, I do my own research, okay? I don't act like a four-year-old following Lucas around, making phone calls and, you know, discrediting, you know. And if I did that, I would follow up and do the research myself. And if I found that Lucas was talking a bunch of scrap, yeah, okay, well, then maybe that's, you know, the deal. But I don't see how people just keep, you know, saying everybody's crazy that's talking about stuff that's proven, you know. Now, those spirals, I have no clue about, you know, I don't even know what those things were. I mean, whether we created them or it just they just happened, or, I mean, it looked like some kind of vortex of some type. I mean, that I just have no clue. And I guess you don't have any clue either, Lucas, from what you were saying. So, I mean, but, you know, certain
Not
things like that you can't explain. But
not a clue. When it comes to 9/11, take a look at the gyro chips installed into planes, and the lawsuit by the pilot against Boeing for installing these chips that basically would allow somebody to remote control the planes from the ground, take over the autopilot of the plane. I suspect that's how they probably did it, it's so easy just to take over the autopilot and, you know, fly those things wherever you want them to.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's so much technology the military has. I wish John would talk about some if he knew. That we don't know about. I mean, you know, they have drone aircraft, et cetera, that type of technology. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, what you just said, you know, if that was the case. In fact, I heard my dad didn't tell me any, my dad didn't study any of this, but I've heard from some expert pilots that any private pilot or somebody with limited experience, these guys didn't have any hours. I mean, come on, they just got licenses? Give me a break. Can do the types of maneuvers that those planes actually did, you know.
Especially the Pentagon maneuver.
Right, right. John Lehrer claims that none these weren't even airplanes. I mean, you'd have to think about that or, do some research on it and so forth, so on. But the whole damn thing is fishy. You know, I mean, like Building 7 coming down. That's what I said. Wait a minute. When I saw that, that was controlled. I said, this is something going on. You know what I mean?
If you look at the photographs for the Pentagon, you could, if you sort through them all, you could find one where there's a picture of the rotor laying on the ground, and it's the same exact size rotor as a Global Hawk.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And you know, come on, man. What was that? A 737? You're gonna. I don't care if that thing went into there before. You know, was ready to disintegrate. I mean, you're still I know there's titanium steel inside of those engines, man. I mean, there was a hole in the wall. I don't know. I don't buy any of it. I don't. You know. And that stupid picture they released too of it exploding. Did you guys see that?
Of what exploding?
Oh, the Pentagon, the building. There was like a camera outside. It was the only release that whoever released, the military or the media.
Oh yeah.
You guys, you didn't see that?
Yeah, we saw that, yeah.
I didn't myself. We got a break coming up.
Yeah.
Hold on, Mike. Everybody stay tuned. We'll be back after the break. Distraction for an hour or two. Lucas, you still there, sir?
Yep.
All right. Mike, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's try to get back on topic here. What questions do you have for Lucas regarding the destroyer?
Well, I'd like him to just comment on that. He's got an article on his website. It's quite interesting, and a couple videos with it. A fiery dragon will cross the sky six times before the earth shall die. That a prophecy. Woman, mother, Shipton prophecy. I was wondering, 14, if you could touch on that. This was really interesting. And if he has any research on any of, like, the weather has been having. I thought we had quite a few 90-degree days in Chicago anyway, but maybe I'll just leave you with that, see if he can,
okay,
bounce that off him, okay?
Real good. Thank you.
Alrighty. Well, okay. Basically, I wrote the article based upon a prophetic poem written by a person who dubbed himself Mother Shipton. The first time it was published was back in the 1400s. And it really is very accurate in describing today's world in this poem. And she talks about a dragon that will cross the sky, and that there'll be big floods, and that the, you know, mountains will crack and the plains will be flooded and all that. And we don't even know if it's a female who wrote this,
really?
But we do know that it was written back in the 1400s.
What was the original language of the Mother Shipton writings?
It was in English,
okay.
And it really baffles me to see that, because then you look at it and you have to wonder if some of these people that wrote this stuff, like not only her but Nostradamus, weren't prophets, but whether they had access to books and information that no longer exist today that talk about, you know, the cyclical event. Because if anybody could seem like a prophet in the future, if you just predict something that you know is going to happen, you know.
Right.
So I suggest that maybe some of these prophets just were privy to information that just doesn't exist today. It might have been destroyed in fires, or, you know, just disintegrated. Paper doesn't last very long.
Well, there's that aspect of it, but I think the Vatican libraries and vaults are similar to the Smithsonian. Stuff goes in there never to be seen again, except by privileged individuals.
Exactly. And, you know, some of those ancient texts that these people might have been reading from might actually be sitting in those vaults right now. And
Have you and I talked about Nikola Tesla, Lucas?
Not really. I don't think so.
Okay. Well, would you agree that what he did as an individual exceeded what entire teams of electrical engineers can't do?
Oh, yes, most definitely. That's why they confiscated all his stuff. And
okay. Now, keeping that in mind, for the audience, Nikola Tesla was an electrical engineer, a brilliant electrical engineer who was an adult back around, 1900, 1920 time frame, something like that. Anyway, do you know who his father worked for?
No, actually I don't.
His father worked for the Vatican.
Huh, interesting.
It's possible, with that connection, it's possible that Nikola Tesla was the first electrical engineer to set foot in the Vatican vaults, the Vatican Library, and open up ancient manuscripts that had schematics in them, electronic schematics. Because he was an electrical engineer, understand what he was looking at where none of these Catholic monks could for all those centuries.
Interesting.
It is interesting.
I was going to say that, if we would have went with DC power back then, we wouldn't have used half of the fossil fuels that we've used in the time period. It's much more efficient, and that's probably why there's most likely pushing from the Rockefellers and all that to, it's amazing how it all connects together.
What Tesla wanted, was, and I think Edison wanted also, was Westinghouse stopped it. Edison and Tesla wanted local power generated at the local level, and we would have probably have 10,000 electrical generating companies in this country if that had happened.
And we wouldn't have a power grid that's all interconnected that could fall apart at any given second.
Oh, absolutely. It would be easier, and this is how bad it is. It's easier to put the lights out in the United States of America in 2010 than to put the lights out in the ancient Roman Empire. Because you would have to steal the oil from millions of homes, the lamp oil, to put the lights out in ancient Rome, the Roman Empire, spread over several thousand miles. Where now, with the national power grid, one EMP burst could knock out the entire power grid.
Yep, and people, when they can't get their Starbucks, are going to get pretty upset, so...
I wish it was that simplistic. We got another caller here, one of our research associates, Sheldon in Tucson. Go ahead, Sheldon.
Hello, guys.
Hey, Sheldon.
Hi, I'm a little confused about something, Wayne. These people from 500-600 years ago, you said they might have actually been seeing a cosmic event instead of predicting something, but the last time the Death Star came by was over 3,600 years ago, so I don't understand that.
Well, I'm talking about the, everything from a shooting star. A shooting star that went across the sky was, called a dragon, all the way to an event. Say for instance, you have the goat farmer laying out on his back, and all of a sudden he sees a big fireball across the sky, and he thinks it lands in the town, the next village over. The next day he gets up, gets on his horse, goes down and tells the king. The king then sends his... knights out to go look for the fire-breathing dragon, and all they find is a big hole in the ground. So that's where the myth of the dragon that lived in craters or lived in caves came from. I mean, it all pretty much fits because, there's white, red, and green dragons, and that's typically what the cosmic events, the asteroids that are coming and meteorites look like. They're either white, green, or red typically. So... it only makes sense that the whole dragon myth, the Bible was, that comes from thousands of years ago. So that the word dragon's been used back as far as that.
Right, but what I'm saying is there was no global cataclysm like 500-700 years ago.
No, these are, things hit the planet all the time. I mean, things continuously hit the planet. I mean, sometimes it picks up more than others. I mean, any given night you can go out there and stare at the sky and see three or four shooting stars. So they had to have an explanation for these. And to me, it was all just dragons. They all considered them dragons.
Okay, I see. And the other thing I had, I tried to call John before the show started. John DiNardo alerted me to this today, that out at Vandenberg Air Force Base, they launched a surveillance satellite into orbit late last night. And it's going out there to look for space debris. This is a $850 million mission. Doesn't that seem like an astronomical amount of money? I mean, NASA's budget is only, $45 million a year.
Huh, and it didn't even make any coverage at all.
No mainstream news coverage I'm aware of, no.
And plus, they had another launch from Vandenberg. This one was for the National Reconnaissance Office about 6 days ago. That's three launches within 1 week from Vandenberg, so maybe they're starting to see the initial stage of the debris field, the rocks that John talks about coming in.
Well, listen, let me tell you what I saw two nights ago. When I went outside, it was a really clear night. And in the south, almost due south exactly, there was a very bright light in the sky, which I'd never seen before. And I know what Venus and I know what Jupiter looks like. Jupiter's by the moon right now. And, you know, this was just over the horizon of the south sky. And I got my roommate out. I was like, have you ever seen anything that bright? I mean, this thing was like four times as bright as the North Star. And I got my telescope out, and I looked at it, and it was a crescent. It was a burning crescent shape, and I'd never seen anything like that before in my life. And that's what the ancient Sumerians depicted Nibiru with, as a crescent shape. So I don't know what to make of that or whether I just saw something. Or, you know, I've never seen anything, an anomaly in the sky in my entire life until just a couple days ago.
Amazing.
Wow.
Okay. Is that it for now, Sheldon, or you got something else?
Yeah, one final thing. I still beg to differ with Lucas about the 9/11 thing. I like to hear what John Lear has been putting out, and here's a guy that's got 40 years of flight experience. He's with the Learjet family. He's been saying that there were no planes on 9/11. It was all holographic imagery projections of planes, and that really makes sense because, you know, Lucas said they found a rotor blade from a Global Hawk outside the Pentagon. Well, they could have easily have put that, planted that there, because right adjacent to the World Trade Center towers, they found a big Boeing engine underneath a scaffolding. How does an engine get underneath scaffolding?
I don't really try and get into the debate about the no planes thing. I've seen evidence that this is just, I mean, it'd be so much easier just to remote control the planes into the buildings. I mean,
But even if that's true, Lucas, planes, they crash against buildings. They don't disappear into them. That's what we're seeing. The planes just disappear into the towers.
Well, it might look that way because they're going 500 miles an hour. And, you know, the planes are only made out of aluminum. I mean, they're basically aluminum foil with an engine. So, you know, it's going to make it look like that when they hit a building that's solid like that. I mean, if you take a shot or a rifle and shoot it into something, it'll look like the same. It'll look like it's disappearing into it.
Okay, but even with that, there were still witnesses that this was put in the New York Times. There's some witnesses that did not even hear or see any type of airplane hit the towers.
Well, yeah, of course. People are numb, you know. People are worried about their Starbucks, you know. They're not even thinking half the time of what the things are going on around them. But, yeah, I mean, you know, everybody's got their opinion about 9/11. To me, it's kind of, at this point, a moot point because, you know, there's bigger and more interesting things going on out there, like maybe an object twice the size of Jupiter that's floating around that they're not telling us about.
Well, that's right. Another thing, Lucas. I was just talking to John on the phone yesterday, and you said, John, that you really believe that this thing is only 3 to 4 times bigger than Earth, but most of us researchers tend to believe it's a brown dwarf star coming in.
Right. Well, I was just repeating what Dr. Harrington said, and he had more credentials in astronomy than most people would ever dream to have.
Well, the unfortunate thing is none of us have access to this information or these telescopes, so all we can do is base our opinion upon the small amount of evidence that's been put out there, and that's why I try and stick to the thing that there's just something out in space, a cosmic event, whether it be a planet, a star, whether it be the fact we're coming to the rift in the center of the galaxy, you know, whether it's a cycle of the sun, something is causing the Earth to go crazy and the elites to run to the hills.
Yeah, you're right. Whatever it is, the point is we need to get prepared. Have a good day, guys.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sheldon. Absolutely. It's real easy, isn't it, Lucas, to get caught up in nuances of, you know, readjusting the chairs on the deck of the Titanic. we need to keep our focus on the real issues and not get caught up in nuances that, quite frankly, are a little more than a distraction.
Yeah. You mentioned the Titanic. I did research into that. I mean, anybody does research into that, I can see that there's a lot of weird coincidences around that situation. Just like there was 9/11, there was a lot of weird coincidences around the Titanic incident, too.
I don't want to go down that rabbit trail too far, but have you looked into John Astor being on that ship?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's the thing. He was against the Federal Reserve.
Right.
And not only that, there was a book written 12 years before the Titanic called The Titan by Morgan Robertson. Okay, and it was the exact same story of the Titanic, almost word for word.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, when you read that, and then right after the Titanic sank, this guy that wrote the book, he ended up dying of poisoning the next year. So,
and what was the author's name? Robert?
Morgan Robertson.
Morgan Robertson. Okay, Morgan.
Yeah,
it's
called The Titan, and it is literally the exact same story. A luxury liner deemed unsinkable, built for the rich, hits an iceberg in the North Atlantic, sinks to the bottom, and takes almost everybody with it.
Yeah, well, how about the armed crew members preventing men from getting on the lifeboats?
Or the fact that they didn't have any red flares. All they had was white party flares. And
right.
They had right. was the first, you know, it was built by J.P. Morgan. I mean, and he was supposed to go on the ship and then change his mind in the last minute, along with Milton Hershey.
Oh, Hershey was supposed to be on there, too, and didn't go?
Yeah, they both backed out of it.
Well, they knew something, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, it goes back a long ways, man.
I know. Well, we got another call here on hold. Cole in Texas. Go ahead, Cole.
Hey, guys. Great show. Really enjoying it. I had two quick questions for Lucas. Could you speak to the Denver International Airport and the Georgia Guidestones and where those fit in on this? And I'll listen offline.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I'll start with the Georgia Guidestones. They're like a timekeeping piece. They're like a sundial, for one. If you read the story that's in the presentation, it was written by Wired magazine, and basically they talk about they did a really good interview, went down there and interviewed all the townspeople and the people involved in it, and the guy that built those or had them built used the assumed name, and he wasn't shy about telling people it was a fake name, R.C. Christian, and he paid a lot of money for these things, and he wanted it to be built to withstand waves, earthquakes, and he wanted it to be for a dazed, confused population to be able to recalibrate the time of year so that they could get a growing season in. Basically, when you're in a situation that's cataclysmic like this, you can't afford to lose a single growing season, so you need to be able to recalibrate the days and when the growing seasons are. So it's got all these astronomical features to it.
Really?
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. It's one of the most amazing things in the country, I think. And then the Denver airport, that place has, you know, all these crazy murals. I mean, it doesn't take a fool to see what that's all about. And, you know, why would they put all these crazy murals of death and destruction in an airport right before you get on an airplane when they're trying to, you know, get rid of that mentality? And, it's got all these, they've been working on that thing for 18 years. They're
right.
still digging. You know, still like 2 miles away, there's fenced off property that says property of Denver International Airport where they're digging up dirt. They moved a massive amount of dirt to build that place and spent billions of dollars. They built it in an area that is not conducive of flying as much as the other airport that they had. Everybody was happy with the airport that they had, and nobody's really happy with Denver Airport. They say there's long lines and delays and all that. And so, you know, they built the roof of that place. It's a very sophisticated Kevlar-type material designed by NASA. They spent a lot of money on the roof, that tent-like material.
Right.
Don't know exactly why. Maybe it's so that maybe it's like a trampoline effect. If things come in, they bounce off it. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, it's good to keep a sense of humor about these things.
Well, no, there's going to be, I think that, you know, from ancient writings and that sort of thing, and talking about the Bible, that there might be even smaller, you know, like hailstone-sized things that are coming in by the thousands.
Oh, I agree with that, absolutely. We got a break coming up. We got another caller on hold. Everybody stay tuned. We'll be right back.
And now here's more of John Moore on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 26th day of September. Lucas, we got one more caller. I'm going to try to get in here before the top of the hour. You there?
Yep, I'm here. Okay, I just wanted to quickly say before the car gets on was in regards to the Georgia Guidestones, too, one of the key words is maintain humanity. It doesn't say reduce population. It says maintain, like after the fact of a big event. So.
Yeah, and the number they give is 500 million, I believe.
Yeah.
Yep. It's that means 6 billion people are going to be dead. Well, we got Doug in Arkansas. Go ahead, Doug.
Wow. Well, that answered one of my questions, the last caller there. That was great. Who's your guest today? What's his name?
Lucas.
Oh, it is Lucas. Well, I thought he was saying he didn't agree with Lucas.
No. That was a caller. That was a caller.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That was two guys ago. When you mentioned dragons, I'm a scholar of sorts and a researcher, and so I went to my different Bible resources and I punched that word in, and it told me it was in 6 books. And so I started just scrolling while the commercial was on through the books and looking at the verses really quickly, just kind of getting a thing and a feel for it. And very interesting word there. And these spirals, my first inclination, I got in here about a half hour into the show, and my first inclination was a type of porthole, okay? And maybe it's a test, opening up these portholes in different areas, because Hollywood presented a couple of different series. One was Quantum Leap, and this guy was going through time portals type of thing. But the one that actually looks kind of like the shape of what you've been talking about, I can't remember the name of the movie, but it was... it was like 4 people, and they just kept leaping, going from portal to portal, and there'd be this portal, and they would come out of it. Sometimes they'd land on their feet, sometimes they'd roll, but it was above the ground. And what I was thinking was, you know, if people have talked about giants, or whatever kind of being, but what if they just started pouring through? What if these portals, what if they are that, and they just opened up in all kinds of places around the earth, and beings started pouring in? So what do you think about that?
I've actually pondered that, because, you know, that spiral, the Norway spiral, happened the morning of the big summit in that area where all the world leaders met, you know, and I've pondered that thought, because you never can take anything and call it impossible until it has been proven impossible. So you know, you never know what these things are. I'll tell you what, in the petroglyphs, one thing I haven't been able to explain or figure out in any way, shape, or form is the fact that a lot of these spiral petroglyphs are definitely closely associated with devil figures, humanoid devil figures with horns. And they seem to be very afraid of these, whatever these horned creatures are. It's amazing to me that all across the world, the same deviled horned creatures are pictured in these petroglyphs along with these spirals. So I have no idea what to make of that.
Well, would you agree with me that you would believe that whatever these powers were, forces or beings, those who wrote about it were very impressed, okay? They had supreme force. They had power, right?
They did.
Yeah.
All right.
Can I comment after the break?
Well, we'll make a quick comment after the break. Everybody stay tuned. We got the top of the other break. We'll be right back.